Child of JK and TCS. First of all, I want to thank the lawyers for being here early. We are running a little ahead of time, so thank you. Pardon me? Oh, is there another attorney? Okay, all right, thank you. Looks like we have a full house.
Your Honor?
Yes.
We won't be waiting for the other attorney.
Oh, thank you. And why?
Well, I'm not exactly certain, but I do know beyond any shadow of a doubt that he won't be here today.
All right, the other attorney will not be here today.
That is correct. His name would be Matt Jorud.
And did he tell you that?
Yes, he did tell me that he would not be here today.
Thank you. We'll take that as an officer of the court. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Having said that, when both of you approach the podium, please identify yourselves for us. Counsel for appellant may proceed. And you're here on behalf of?
The respondent.
Oh, all right. Counsel for appellant. You're here on behalf of mother?
Ms. Kreiner.
Thank you. You may approach the podium and then identify yourself for us. For the record, thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Brian Geis, G as in George, E-I-S as in Sam. And seated before you late this morning is my client, Miss Jamie Kreiner. Miss Kreiner was labeled or branded, if you will, palpably unfit. Because some years ago, Your Honors, my client wasn't the person you see before you today. And I was not her attorney at the time, but my client had a termination of parental rights. That snowball kept rolling as she had additional children. When Ms. Kreiner and I met in Otter Tail County, she had her most recent child. And we are here today because I am certain that my client should no longer be branded palpably unfit. Why?
Well, counsel, pursuant to the statute of parent whose parental rights have previously been terminated is presumed to be unfit, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Not disputing that your client's rights, parental rights were previously terminated for other children.
I'm sorry, the question was?
You're not disputing that she previously had her parental rights terminated with regard to her other children?
No, Your Honor.
So the question here is whether she rebutted the presumption of palpable unfitness.
Exactly.
And whether the district court order correctly analyzed the factors in reaching its conclusion.
Yes, Your Honor. In order to rebut the presumption of palpable unfitness, you need to demonstrate significant, substantial, positive changes. These changes would include sobriety, which my client has now for a number of years, stable housing, employment, transportation, and a close network of family and friends. My client is...
Wait a second. Are you talking about evidence as it existed at the time of trial?
I am, indeed, Your Honor.
Okay.
And it seems to me that the state hinged its case on two factors. Number one, that they considered my client low functioning, and number two, that my client had mental health needs. Now,
well, counsel, your client is certainly to be commended for having stable employment and a good housing situation and a network of support, but in analyzing whether the presumption has been rebutted, the district court is to consider the grounds for termination, the prior termination of parental rights. And your client's mental health condition and cognitive issues were factors that were part of the grounds for the prior termination. So wasn't it appropriate for the court to consider those factors in this case?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And then what evidence is there in the record to show that your client has improved in those areas, such as to raise a genuine issue of fact as to whether she's suitable to be entrusted to care for the child at issue here?
Thank you for asking, Your Honor. My client demonstrated during the trial in this matter at the district court that she is indeed not low functioning, for starters. Second, with the mental health needs, which the state relied upon, my client has and was already undertaking the recommendations of the parental capacity assessment. And in fact, my client to this day is still complying with the recommendations of the parental capacity assessment. She was already by the time of trial.
So let's talk about those two points in a little more detail. What recommendations at the time of trial was she following?
What recommendations?
From the parental assessment.
Okay, thank you. My client was already, she had already completed parenting classes, and even before the birth of her child, she voluntarily, at her own accord, had gone to prenatal medical appointments. She was undergoing consistently therapy and counseling, psychiatric follow-up, and medication management. And again, those were started by the time of the trial and are ongoing to this day. Does that answer your question, Your Honor?
Yeah, and then on the first point, you said she demonstrated that she's not low functioning at trial. Can you expand on that?
Yes, Your Honor, I would consider someone to be low functioning if they were unable to hold employment, if they were unable to afford their own housing suitable for themselves and their children, if they were unable to drive a motor vehicle, if they had chemical dependency issues. The parental capacity, Your Honor, based its finding of low functioning on my client's IQ.
You know, I don't see a reference in the district court's order to low functioning, but I do see a reference in finding number 21 to the parental capacity evaluation, and a reference that states that your client was struggling with severe and persistent mental illness, which had to be addressed and managed before she could be considered appropriate to care for a child. And so rather than focus on whether your client is low functioning or not, because clearly we have case law that indicates that even low functioning parents can be proper and suitable parents to provide care for their children, I'm wondering if you can tell me which findings in the court's order you think are not supported by substantial evidence. Because it's a fairly lengthy, detailed order.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that my client's progress since her earlier terminations, in addition to the mental health treatment that she was seeking and obtaining, I think that that was overlooked by the courts. In fact, even the professional who appeared from the center where the parental capacity assessment was done, she admitted that as long as my client would follow the recommendations and seek out these different mental health treatments, that she would indeed be a suitable parent.
All right, well, the concern I have is this. We've got this order with detailed findings, one of which tells us in finding 25 that in 2017, when the Wisconsin court terminated parental rights on the basis of unfitness, she was told what she needed to do, and that during her pregnancy, while she was in Otter Tail County, she was provided services with, and there's a finding here that she didn't follow through with those services. And then there are other findings about parental capacity, services that were offered, numerous child visitations that were canceled. And so I'm trying to get, I understand what you're telling me. I have full appreciation and respect for progress your client has made. I'm particularly concerned with the way things existed at the time of trial and what would make this court order inaccurate and not based on substantial evidence.
Thank you. This is a dilemma that I have encountered in similar cases that are at the district court level. We have what we affectionately refer to as the agency, which is actually Human Services. And Human Services comes up with these recommended services. And they will actually state where the parent is supposed to have these services done. Okay? Now, Ms. Kreiner followed their recommendations as best that she could, and...
Well, counsel, she didn't make it to all the parenting time that was made available to her. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And she also didn't go in for the parent observation component of the parental capacity exam, correct?
She attempted to have that rescheduled, Your Honor. So digressing, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Not only Ms. Kreiner, but other clients of mine choose to engage in services offered through other entities that would basically be the same as those that are prescribed or recommended by the agency. So in addition to following those that were prescribed by the agency with particular providers, she also sought services that were equivalent to those directed by the agency from different providers. Does that answer your question?
Well, yes and no. I actually appreciate what you're saying about the multitude of services that are often not just seemingly not just offered to parents, but sort of seemingly overwhelm parents when they are in the midst of struggling through life and then told that they must accept services at various different places. There are transportation issues. There are all sorts of reasons why parents have difficulty actually accepting those services. The one thing that makes it difficult for me to understand in these cases is how a parent can parent a child full time if he or she cannot get to the scheduled visits with the child. And finding 18 tells us that your client missed so many scheduled child visits that they were actually reduced in time, and she was told they would be reduced in frequency if she missed another visit, and then she missed another visit. I'd like to get to address that.
Thank you. Herein lies another quandary. The clock is running, and things need to be accomplished simultaneously. My client needs to hold employment and do a number of other things at the same time, including but not limited to visits with her child. And it is a balance that she needs to strike in order that she may maintain her employment, which affords her housing, and at the same time, make every attempt to make every visit possible. It's a delicate balance. And I know in a utopia, we would all stop what we're doing because our children are our main priority.
Okay, I understand your argument. Your time is up.
Thank you.
I get the gist of your answer, and you'll have rebuttal. Respondent.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Ben Olson. I represent the respondent in this case, which is Otter Tail County. There are two main questions that I'd like to discuss with the court this morning. First, did either parent rebut the statutory presumption as to their palpable unfitness that we've been talking about so far? And second, did the district court abuse its discretion when it determined that a termination of both parents' parental rights was in the best interests of the child subject to this case?
Counsel, in evaluating whether the presumption is rebutted, what evidence should the district court consider? Should it consider only the evidence produced by the parent, or can it also consider evidence produced by the state or the county?
I think that's a good question. The case that I cited in my brief, JAK, it's 907 Northwest 2D 241, I think quite clearly says that there's a burden of production, meaning that a parent has to put on evidence, and that's the evidence the court that's the evidence the court looks at to determine whether or not there's a genuine issue of fact as to the parent's fitness. And then I think
I agree with you there, but it seems to me the district court didn't do that, because the district court looked at the parenting capacity evaluation in determining whether the presumption had been rebutted.
I think I understand the second layer to the question. So is it only what the parent puts on that can be considered, or is it? The question that I was answering previously was basically, the argument that I made with regard to Mr. Simon is, can he rebut a presumption by the evidence that other people put on? And I think the answer to that question is no. But does the court have to close its eyes to the rest of the evidence that's put on when it determines what a parent has presented rebuts the presumption? I think that's a separate question. I think the court is doing what it should be doing in determining whether there's a genuine issue of fact by considering not only what evidence the parent put on, but also evidence to say that even in those circumstances, even assuming what the parent has said is true, that there is other evidence that's crucial to determining whether or not that demonstrates fitness. And I think that is particularly true in this case, and I think that's why the court is inquiring into that. We have facts that in a lot of cases would rebut a presumption. Ms. Kreiner was employed. She had demonstrated sobriety for a number of years. She was living within her means. She had a car. She had friends. She had character evidence that said she was good with children.
She was caring for someone else's children.
Right. That's accurate. And the district court gave little credibility to the character evidence that was put on.
Should the court have been weighing the evidence at that point? Isn't the court supposed to view the evidence to see if there's a genuine issue of fact in terms of looking at whether the presumption has been rebutted?
Yes. So I suppose that it would be fair to say that a court shouldn't be saying, well, I don't know that I would agree with the court on that, because if a parent, we're not looking at allegations on paper, we're at a trial and the court is the fact finder and the court has to decide whether or not what a parent said or what a witness said is credible. So a parent can say, I am a good parent. If the court can only consider that statement, whether or not it thinks it's credible doesn't matter, then there is no presumption. It doesn't have any effect. Every parent is going to say, I can parent, and they're going to put on a witness, a family member, a significant other that says, I've seen this person be appropriate. If that's all it takes, there's no presumption at all.
Well, she did more than that here, but why isn't the evidence about her housing, employment, her testimony regarding being in therapy, getting an independent mental health assessment, why isn't that sufficient to rebut the presumption? I mean, it's kind of a two-step test, right? First, the question is whether the presumption has been rebutted, and if it has, then is there clear and convincing evidence to show that she's palpably unfit? So why wasn't the evidence that she produced sufficient to rebut the presumption?
So I'd like to break the types of evidence that she put on into categories. First, we have the facts that she had close friends, she had people that supported her. She had demonstrated sobriety. She had stable housing and employment. She was living between or within her means, and she had a car.
Sounds like she was pretty well-functioning.
Right, and the point that I want to make is those were not changes in Ms. Kreiner's circumstances. Those all existed.
Were changes from some of the prior termination proceedings.
I disagree. I think that those things were true when her parental rights were terminated in 2017. She's testified at trial. She'd been sober for 7 years. She'd worked at her job for 5 years. I guess we shouldn't be assuming, but she worked in a community that wasn't in her home community. She had to get to work. She had transportation at that point in time. And I don't know that we can turn a parental rights case on whether or not she was living within her means. I think the important facts that Ms. Kreiner relies on existed when her parental rights were terminated in the past, because her mental illness has had such a negative effect on the rest of her life, namely her decision making.
What kind of decision making are you talking about? Because it's sort of hard to imagine somebody with such severe and persistent mental illness being able to maintain employment. Right. For 7 years.
I agree with that. I think the evidence that was put on a trial and in the record suggest that Ms. Krenner can't make or hasn't been making decisions about her own personal life. There's evidence that she has jumped into relationships prematurely and that she's had numerous children with individuals that she doesn't have a good relationship with. And that's not in and of itself something that we should focus on. People make bad decisions.
But you are focusing on them. So focus on something that you should focus on. What is it?
What I meant to say is we shouldn't focus on one instance of a bad decision. We should focus on a trend of bad decisions.
Well, tell me, what about this mental illness? What is there in the record that tells us her mental illness makes her unfit?
Certainly. The person that conducted the parental capacity evaluation said that Ms. Krenner's mental illness makes her impulsive. She's made decisions that are not in her best interests or that of her children, again, with the relationships, but also she's demonstrated that she's assaultive towards other people, that she hasn't been able to digest feedback from the providers that have been in her life and use that to become someone who's safe to be around children. That's what the evidence.
She cared for a friend's children.
Right. And I think the.
Without any evidence of incident.
Certainly.
Police calls, complaints of neglect or abuse.
I agree with that. But I like to focus on the statement made by the district court. The fact that you are caring for a child doesn't mean it's safe for you to do so. Yes, there is no evidence that there were child maltreatment reports regarding the care of these children or that they were physically harmed in her care, that she neglected them or otherwise. But I just don't think that babysitting is the same as parenting.
I will grant you that. Okay, tell me, what in the record do we find about assaultive behavior?
In the parental capacity, there's a recitation of Ms. Krenner's criminal history and how she's treated other individuals in her life. There are incidents of violence that are recounted.
Okay, what else? Why else do you think she can't care for her child?
Specifically relating to her mental illness, I think it is. She has demonstrated impulsive behavior, assaultive behavior, and decision-making that has not been in her own best interests. And in that and so far so that there's a recommendation that she live in a supervised environment or that she have a guardian. And I understand that that's a strong recommendation, but if we're to say that a professional is recommending that Ms. Krenner not independently care for herself, how can we extend that and assume or not assume, but decide that she can independently care for herself and a child?
Okay, this is the difficulty I'm having with what you're telling us. At the time that she had the child who's the subject of this proceeding and the termination proceeding, that she'd worked for several years, mm-hmm. had been employed, and that she'd lived on her own for a number of years.
I go back.
And she wasn't incarcerated.
I go back to what I believe to be true and what's supported by the record is that those things were true when her parental rights were terminated in the past. And if you go look at those orders that are in the record, if you read why her parental rights were terminated and you compare that to the parental capacity that was submitted into evidence, they are extremely similar.
Okay, let me
ask about, you. I'm sorry, what about her participation in services? Has she improved in that regard?
As of the date of trial, she was participating in therapy. But again, I think the case law says participating in services isn't enough. You have to say, the question I believe the court has to ask itself is whether because of that individual, that parent's participation in services, he or she is now fit to parent more so than they were in the past. And I don't think that is something the court can find on this record.
Okay.
And that really is the crux of the issue from my perspective. There are things Ms. Kreiner was doing at the time her rights were terminated in the past. So be it. There's character evidence that the court disregarded. So what we're left with is her participation in services, which the agency isn't saying isn't true.
So did the core evaluation express concern that she would continue to be impulsive and aggressive and or exhibit impulsive and aggressive behaviors because of her continuing mental health challenges?
It did. The only quote that I can bring to the front of my mind right now is that Ms. Kreiner is a risk to herself and others in her community. And I don't know that that's the verbatim quote, but it's in that parental capacity.
So if, assuming for purposes of argument that Ms. Kreiner rebutted the presumption, because the presumption is easily rebuttable, is there clear and convincing evidence to show, taking the evidence as a whole, to show that she is palpably unfit?
I think the answer to that question is absolutely. And I think that there is case law. I can't point to a reported case, but there is case law, because I don't have it before me, but there is case law that says this court doesn't need to remand this if it finds that on a de novo review the presumption was rebutted. It can take the facts and decide that there is clear and convincing evidence to support a finding of palpable unfitness. And I think if the court were to decide that Ms. Kreiner rebutted the presumption, that is the track that it should take.
What about the finding regarding the child's best interests? Can you briefly address that issue?
Yes. So the statute requires that the court clearly say that a termination is in the child's best interest. It did that. The statute also, or rules, require that the court consider three different factors. And if I think the court didn't explicitly say, I considered these factors and here's what I considered with regard to each factor. But if you look, I think at the record, it's clear that there was a consideration of the child's interest in preserving his parent and child relationship, the parent's interest in preserving his or her parent-child relationship, and then the child's competing interests and needs, which is stated clearly in the order. The court's primary consideration is the child's need for a stable home and environment, and he did not have that in his parents' care. That was why the court made the decision that it did. I think I'll leave it with that, given the time that I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Rebuttal?
Your Honors, I am not certain if you intended me to start in any particular area with this rebuttal, but I would like to talk for a moment regarding parental capacity assessments in general and specifically concerning my client. Now, these assessments are not undertaken by the public at large. In fact, as far as I know from my experience with child protection cases, you need a referral from an agency like Human Services to even undertake one. In other words, going into a parental capacity, the evaluators know that something is up, that you're there because your parental abilities are being questioned. And in fact, these evaluators have access to documents that would substantiate the concern. For example, they would have access to documents from the agency wherein a parent is hypothetically going to or through a parental capacity because the parent has chemical health issues. So they know up front what they are looking for. They are tipped off, if you will. Now, in my client's case, I can't begin to imagine all of the documents that were supplied to CORE Professional Services prior to her evaluation. Well, there were these previous terminations. There were allegations of mental health concerns. So CORE had all of this information, this background, if you will, with which to tailor their evaluation. Now, I'm not saying that their findings were illegitimate. I'm not saying that at all. My client is getting mental health treatment. So obviously there was something to it. But my client's mental health is not inhibiting her ability to parent, to care for children. Now,
counsel, did your client produce any evidence regarding the questions of impulsivity or aggressive behavior in terms of improvements in those areas?
Your Honor, that's what my client, those are primary areas that my client is in therapy and counseling for. And she was at the time of the trial. Now, I'd
was
like...
Was there evidence that that counseling was yielding results? Positive results.
Well, Your Honor, I have limited means, and I wasn't able to bring her counselor or therapist in to testify at trial. In retrospect, I wish I had pursued that avenue further. But I do know that she has, based on the documents that I did not have at the time of trial, that she has completed a whole host of sessions and programs, exactly what, again, was recommended through and at the end of the CORE Professional Services evaluation. The evaluation consists largely of examinations. And yes, there is an observation period that my client tried to have reset based upon her availability. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. The matter has been well argued, and it is taken under advisement.